Hi, this is Larry London. Welcome once again to Border Crossings. We are joined today by a multi-platinum Juno Award-winning singer-songwriter who is headed out on tour in February. In fact, he's going around the world. I was looking at the tour schedule. He's going to be going through Europe and many, many other places here in the United States as well. We are so thrilled to have him back on the show here on The Voice of America. This time, we're kind of across the country. We're here in D.C. He's in California. J.P. Sachs is with us. Welcome back to The Voice of America and to Border Crossings, J.P. It's great to have you.
Great to see you again, Larry. And you are going to make a lot of Canadians very happy that you introduced me as a Juno winner and not a Grammy nominee.
Well, congratulations to you on that big award. I mean, that the Juno is the Canadian equivalent to the Grammy, and that is a huge honor. Being a Canadian yourself, that's tremendous honor.
It was a very, very exciting day. It happened just like this. It was also on Zoom, which was a humbling dichotomy to be experiencing one of the most meaningful validations I had ever experienced from my home country. But doing so, it was at my studio too, which is where I used to live when I was 22. I converted my old house into my studio. So I'm in this like small house in North Hollywood in my living room on this laptop on Zoom wearing a suit. It really, you know, a lot of the things that we've had to maneuver during the pandemic, I think have made it easier to keep a head on your shoulders in moments like that.
Well, congratulations on all the success.
Thanks.
And you have the new album, Dangerous Levels of Introspection, mm-hmm. and you've put out the deluxe version.
Yep.
Which is, you know, I mean, congratulations on how well the album's doing. And so it took you 5 years to put this album out, I read. You've been working on it for about 5 years. Why did it take so long? That's a lot of introspection.
Dangerous levels, you might argue. I mean, you've spoken to a lot of artists, and I'm sure, you know, especially when you speak to artists who have been doing it for decades, there's always that reference point of their first album. You know, when I find a new artist that's, you know, been making music for a while, I always go back. I was like, you know, what was their first album? Where did they start? And I had this obsession in my head that this first album of mine needed to represent the beginning of the kind of career I'd like to have for the rest of my life. You know, I wanted to represent the kind of sincerity, the kind of nuance, the kind of emotional transparency. I was imagining myself at 70 years old looking back on my catalog and wanting to make sure I was proud of exactly how I represented the beginnings of my life making music. So I think that's why it took so long, but I'm really proud of it. It's honest in all the ways I wanted it to be.
Mm-hmm. And how about COVID? How did the whole COVID pandemic affect the writing of the songs that you put onto the new album?
I mean, silver linings aren't there unless you look for them. And I think the last 18 months has been a crash course for all of us in the skill of finding a silver lining. I never really thought of it as a skill set before, but I found that in the days where I was really discouraged, it was the days I wasn't looking for them. That they were there if I put the work in to find them. And also I'm very blessed to have a life that was able to continue in a career that I could keep doing. But one of the silver linings for me was every moment of this album got a dedicated 3 a.m. pacing around the living room thinking about how it was supposed to be. Whereas, you know, if we were in a world that looks a little bit more like it does now, where I'm touring and I'm playing festivals, I'm not sure I would have been able to obsess over it in quite the same way. It certainly wouldn't be the same album, for better or for worse. Mm-hmm. I mean, I might have overanalyzed some of the good out of it at some points. Who knows?
And that, well, you were in Mexico City, I guess, just last night, as a matter of fact. So you just got back to Los Angeles. So what was it like getting back on stage wherever that first show was after COVID? What did that feel like? I mean, you know, was it unfamiliar? Was it like riding a bike? Did it feel familiar again? Or what was it like getting back on stage in front of a live crowd?
You know, I think one of my first, if not my first live audience back, because for 18 months, all of our shows were like this, right? It was, I knew there were people watching, but I couldn't see them. It was like kind of like a Truman Show career situation where like all of this stuff was happening in my career, but like it easily could have been formulated by someone lying to me. And the first time, it might have been the first time I was in front of a real audience post-COVID, was in Central Park.
Wow.
for like 60,000 people with Bruce Springsteen and Paul Simon and the Killers and Patti Smith. So that was different. Before that, never played for more than like maybe 1,000 or two people. And then we did this Welcome Back New York concert in Central Park and didn't feel quite as Truman Show-y anymore.
Well, do you like the big festivals or do you prefer the smaller intimate gatherings?
I like them both a lot for very different reasons. Mm-hmm. I like the big festivals because there's such an elation to being surrounded by that many people sharing a similar emotional moment. It'll never cease to be mystical to me that these songs that come from these very lonely, intimate, very personal parts of my life, places where I connect to myself, mm-hmm. those lonely moments then get to become art that connects me to the most other people. Mm-hmm. I think there's such a metaphor in that, and not just because I'm an annoying songwriter. I think there's a metaphor in that sometimes our most lonely moments, our most private experiences are actually the thing that does bring us closer to the most other people. Mm-hmm. And music is so symbolic of that to me. So at a festival, you know, I haven't played that many of them, but you know, in Mexico City, I'm looking at on 10,000 people who in a city I've never performed for before, and we're singing along to a song together. And it's like, it's the most incredible thing. But, you know, I'll always have a place in my heart for my roots, which is in a room with a few hundred people. You know, we can really look people in the eyes. Mm-hmm. Now, I get more lost in a song when I can look someone in the eyes while I'm singing it.
Now, when you go somewhere where they don't speak English and they know the words to your song, that has to be even more gratifying, more validating to you as a songwriter that people really have taken the time to study and learn the lyrics to your songs.
I can't say I've had that experience all that many times, but I was certainly embarrassed in Mexico City that my Spanish wasn't better. When I was doing all the press and all the interviews in Mexico City, you know, I was at a festival. So there's all these tents and you're doing like 12 in a row. And each one of them, like they had to translate my answers. And I just got increasingly more and more embarrassed that I couldn't do these interviews in Spanish. And I started promising the journalists that the next time I was in Mexico City, I was going to do the interview in Spanish. So I've given myself quite a task.
I guess as an artist who does travel the world like you do, all you really have to do is specialize in a couple of words. You know, you just get on stage and learn, you know, hola, you know, bueno, learn a couple of words.
It definitely would help. But I've put out a number of songs with Spanish speaking artists. So I think especially when I start touring in Latin America or when I'm in Spain, there may be an expectation that I do the Spanish parts of these songs, which I think I need to figure out how to do.
And on your schedule, I saw you have Poland coming up, mm-hmm. and you have some other places, you know, throughout Europe coming up. I think it is February, March. So you've got a lot of languages to master.
Europe would be a little bit harder.
We're talking with JP Sachs, and he has not only the new album out, you know, which is called Dangerous Levels of Introspection, but he has the deluxe version as well that's out now. And I know that one of the big songs, you know, I mean, your streams are in the billions already, If the World Was Ending, which is a collaboration with Julia Michaels. And it's no secret that you've had a personal relationship with Julia Michaels. Is that ongoing? Are you guys still together on a personal level?
She's still upstairs sleeping.
Oh, she is?
Yeah, I had to wrestle myself out of bed to come set up my laptop in the living room and talk to you. Because I just got back from tour, right? So the morning snuggles were very much overdue. So
good for you. Congratulations. That's great. This is a business where relationships are hard to maintain, you know.
We have been together for going on 2.5 years.
That's fantastic. Congratulations to you.
Lived together for a year and a half of them, and I still love her very much.
Did you guys meet because of the song and the music collaboration, or did you meet before it and then collaborate because of the relationship?
We met the day we wrote If the World Was Ending.
Wow. I had her on the show. She's been on the show.
Isn't she wonderful?
She is. She is. I can see why, you know, you would be drawn to her. She's very, very talented.
We shared what I can confidently say was the best day of my life, because, I mean, the amount that changed in my life July 20th, 2019, writing If the World Was Ending and meeting Julia, like those, that changed both my personal life and my career forever.
And are you going to collaborate on one of her projects? Have you talked about doing something with her on something she's got coming out?
A short little funny
story. Or is that too much of a secret?
No, I can tell you a little funny story about that. So you were asking earlier about, you know, how COVID affected, you know, our creativity and how we were making music. And there was a moment, I guess it was around this time last year, where we were both sitting in the living room at like 2 a.m. and both just totally tripping out about our albums. Like, could they be better? Could they be better? Is there another song? Could I have another? Both of us just like anxiety central. And we decided, we're like, you know what? Let's just take 4 days. We'll take 2 days on your album and 2 days on my album and just see what happens. And in those 4 days, we wrote together the first single on her album and the first single on the original version of my album. It was a song of hers called All Your Exes and a song of mine called Like That, which to me, and the contrast of those songs makes me so happy because they're both love songs in a sense. They're just love songs with such a dramatically different tone, but we wrote them in the same 4 days together for each other's projects.
Wow, that is great. I mean, you know, to not only have such a great relationship with somebody who's in the same business, but does something, you know, you guys complement each other because you're both songwriters and you're both so good at what you do.
Larry, I used to tell people that I would never date another songwriter. I used to say it, which, again, here's my annoying metaphor. I think is a good little example of how love will always be better than your ability to come up with what it should be.
Like it. I like it a lot. I like it a lot. JP Sachs, our guest here on Border Cross. You're going to do something live for us, aren't you?
You're going to get a morning voice rendition of some of these songs from the living room.
All right. Well, maybe we can wake Julia and she'll come down and join you.
Maybe
we can get If the World Was Ending. I mean, maybe she'll do a surprise in her pajamas.
I will sing you If the World Was Ending, but I highly doubt she shows up for the second verse.
I think. All right, what are you going to sing for us?
Very cooped up. We said three songs. I can play any three. Should we start with that one?
Yeah, whatever you feel you're in the mood for right now.
Do it. Well, I definitely want to play you If the World Was Ending because I love that song. But I also want to play you a song called Soft Landing.
Yes, the new single.
First, most recent single I put out, which requires some yelling. So we'll definitely wake her up with that one if my voice agrees to it. Because I said, we're working with some morning voice right now. We'll make it, you know, it'll be more intimate because of that. And then the third one, you know, we'll see what conversation, you know, what songs our conversation leads us to. And then we'll pick a third because we're not doing them all at the same time, right? We're just going one by one.
No, not at the same time. No. We'll break them up.
Yeah, they would sound very messy if I played them simultaneously.
Oh, we're thrilled to have JP Sachs on the show. As always, very, very interesting to talk to you and always a pleasure.
Thank you, Larry.
I was distracted and in traffic. I didn't feel it when the earthquake happened, but it really got me thinking, were you out drinking? Were you in the living room, chilling, watching television? It's been a year now. Think I figured out how to let you go and let communication die. I know, you know, we know you weren't down for forever and it's fine. I know, you know, we weren't meant for each other. Fine. But if the world was ending, you'd come over, right? You'd come over and you'd stay the night. Would you love me for the hell of it? All our fears would be irrelevant. If the world was ending, you'd come over, right? Sky be falling while I hold you tight. No, there wouldn't be a reason why we would even have to say goodbye. If the world was ending, you'd come over, right? Right. If the world was ending, you'd come over, right? I tried to imagine your reaction. It didn't scare me when the earthquake happened, but it really got me thinking. That night we went drinking, stumbled in the house and didn't make it past the kitchen. Oh, it's been here now. I think I figured out how to think about you without it ripping my heart out. And I know, you know, we know you aren't down for faith, and it's fine. I know, you know, we weren't meant for each other, and it's fine. But if the world was ending, you'd come over, right? You'd come over and you'd stay the night. Would you love me for the hell of it? All our fears would be irrelevant. If the world was ending, you'd come over, right? Sky be falling while I hold you tight. Now there wouldn't be a reason why we would even have to say goodbye if the world was ending. You come over, right? You come over, you come over, you come over, right? Mm-hmm. If the world was ending, you come over, right?
I love it. I love it. I love it. That's great. I love it. Wow. I remember seeing you on the Grammy show perform that with Julie. You guys were walking on the street, if I'm not mistaken. You were outside.
That was the VMAs.
The VMAs. Yeah, you guys were outside and, you know, I loved it. Loved the performance. And it was nominated for the Grammy. I think it was nominated at the VMAs as well. You guys were there. And
I'm not sure we got the VMA nomination, but if you want to claim it,
I'll give it to you. Take the VMA award. It's yours.
I'd like to accept this Larry VMA.
There you go.
It was quite an adventure. That was we did it on one of the lots in LA. It's like it was a fake street where they filmed a lot of movies, and I was super stoked. And then, you know, obviously that was a very exciting time in our lives.
Now, can you imagine? I mean, when somebody called you up and said, "Hey, JP, you've reached 1 billion streams." Mm-hmm. I mean, is that like did you ever imagine 1 billion of anything?
It's a pretty incomprehensible thing. It was a challenge in emotional internalization, some of the metrics of this song, because, you know, when you're in front of people singing along, that's something I think as a human, you know how to take in. Like, oh my gosh, like this is really connecting with a lot of people and I can really feel it. But like on zeros on a screen, like I don't know what to, like it takes an effort to conceptualize. So it's very cool. It doesn't make me feel very much other than like, whoa, cool. But when I show up to a city I've never been to and people are singing along, like my heart explodes.
Right. And when that check comes every month, then whoo, okay. Keep the zeros coming. Mm-hmm. Hopefully you're an artist that has benefited. I know there's been some talk and I've heard, you know, obviously we read the stories about some artists, you know, are upset about the way that's been handled, you know, the streaming and the way that compensation goes, because artists should be getting a share of that and some artists aren't. But that's for another discussion at another time, because we're here to talk about the new album.
Totally. But,
huh?
I said, absolutely. That is a different conversation that we could totally sidebar into, but I think it would get a little bit boring.
Yes. Well, we'll talk about it at the Thanksgiving table.
Perfect.
Now, I wanted to ask you, have you ever, because I know you're known for having the beard. As long as I've known you, you've had the beard. Have you ever cut that off, or was there a risk of you won't be the same guy?
It's a little longer than it usually is right now because I've been on tour and I haven't been, like, my hair's a little scruffier, my beard's a little scruffier. We're letting things grow out a little bit, but I think probably pre-Thanksgiving I'm gonna tidy things up. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna get all neat for Thanksgiving. But Julia also does not like it when I shave the beard, because I prefer.
She doesn't. Well, then you gotta get rid of it.
No, she doesn't like it when I shave it.
Oh, but then you gotta keep it then.
Yeah. So every time I shave it, I get like 20% less affection for 48 hours. I think this is like her. This is her preferred situation. But I like it when it's smaller. So we negotiate.
You negotiate. Now you also collaborated with Maren Morris. I mean. Mm-hmm. Is that on the new album too?
It is. It is on there. A song called Line by Line. It was one of the first songs I ever wrote in Nashville. Maren was the first person I ever wrote with in Nashville. So I really got to start at the top out there.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And who else? I mean, are there other artists on the new album, or how about on your wish list?
Collaborations on the album. There's Julia, there's Maren, and there's John Mayer. those are the collaborations.
Not a bad list. Not a bad list.
Dream collaborations for the future. I would like to sing a song with Adele. I really want to do a song with Camilo. Collaborating with her could be really cool.
Mm-hmm. And how about, moments. You know, on tour, is there places that you haven't been that you have on your, I want to go there, that you're going to tell your record label, this is where I want to go?
Well, we have the European tour, so I'm not going to give you that answer because that was certainly a dream, but that dream is in my calendar. It's always nice when dreams are in your calendar. Mm-hmm. The Latin America tour is not confirmed in my calendar yet. So that's the one I'm giving everyone a hard time about because I've been wanting to tour in Latin America as long as I can remember. And mm-hmm. this show we just did in Mexico City has solidified that has to happen. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say manifesting because that feels passive. I'm actively planning and sending emails and phone calls and trying to bring that one to fruition.
Now, we are broadcasting, you know, in Europe, in Eastern Europe and all throughout Europe. As a matter of fact, I got a lot of email from Russia. People ask for your music. So I don't know.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know if you've got plans to go there, but you're on the list there. You're on the radar.
Larry, I think sometimes as much, like, I love music more than almost everything, but I do think sometimes it's just an excuse to get to travel all over the world and meet interesting people. Because if this goes the way I would like it to go, I will play everywhere, Russia included. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I make music that is about what it sincerely feels like to be myself, which mm-hmm. usually means when I meet people through the music, they're people who want to have the kind of conversations that I want to jump into with everyone. I love talking to strangers about, you know, I love skipping the small talk, and my music kind of acts as a caveat to bypass the small mm-hmm. talk. So, you know, the idea of going to any place in the world, whether it be Russia or Brazil or Turkey or anywhere.
Yep. Well, we broadcast all those places, so I'm sure you'll be invited if you haven't already been. Now, you grew up in a musical family. Your grandfather is a Grammy-winning cellist. Mm-hmm. And what advice has he given you, I mean, that you have been able to apply to what you do? Is there anything that he said that resonated in what you're doing?
It's less what he said and more what he represented as an artist, as a musician. He dedicated his life to the pursuit of beauty, to just getting to the bottom of beauty. There is something so incredible to me about being a solo instrumentalist, because if I think about it, like, I have a number of tools at my disposal when it comes to trying to craft an emotion in a song. Because what I'm trying to do with the song, right, is take the part of my life that I'm writing about, really try and understand what that part of my life feels like, mm-hmm. that moment in my life feels like, and then match what the song makes me feel like to the moment in my life. And as long as they don't quite match, I have different tools to get them to match. I have the way, predominantly the words and how I'm crafting the lyricism, you know, melodies, music production, instrumentation. I have so many tools to try and match that emotion. Whereas as a solo instrumentalist, you are playing repertoire that has been played by thousands of other people. And yet you are doing it in a way that elicits a response in an audience member that no other person playing it does. And the way my grandfather played the Bach suites, the kind of minutia used in that music is so mind-boggling to me. Because, you know, you hear his recording of the Bach suites and you hear any other hundreds of thousands of times it's been played, and it feels different, and it's very hard to quantify. But my grandfather spent his life, like, excavating the beauty in that music. And it's the nuance of, you know, his vibrato, his tone, the push and pull between notes, the tension and release. And, like, he used to talk about smaller and smaller and smaller points of tension and release in the music, like, to the millisecond. And it's just amazing. So I think, what have I learned from him? It's not so much anything he specifically said to me, but more just how inherently valuable dedicating yourself to finding that humanity and art is. Mm. Because he dedicated his whole life to it. Not just doing it himself, but also teaching others. So having him as my roots and also his philosophies, what I'm rooted in, certainly keeps me focused, I think, on the right things in my music, what I'm actually doing it for.
You sound like a real, like a student of music, of the song, of the art, of the craft. You really sound like you have studied the craft of songwriting. And so for, you know, because of that, I wanted to know, do you have any interest to like score a film? Is that something that you've thought about?
Someday, I think that'd be so exciting. I remember like watching Harold and Maude as a teenager and thinking like, because Cat Stevens does that whole soundtrack, and thinking someday I'm going to do something like that.
Cool.
Certainly on the bucket list for sure.
Now, you've been involved with many charities throughout your career, and I think Doctors Without Borders was one that you recently supported, and some other charities as well. Are you involved with any charities these days?
Doctors Without Borders is we did a project, I guess it was about a year ago now, where we did that collaboration version of If the World Was Ending with Doctors Without Borders. And the way that came about was, one, if you watch that video at the end of it, my friend Crystal, who works with Doctors Without Borders, talks about their projects around the world and talks about what they were doing at that time in the middle of responding to COVID-19. And so she's been my friend for 10 years and she works with that organization. So I admire so much what they do, because Doctors Without Borders are the people showing up to help those in areas that very few people are willing to go into or are even allowed to go into. So to me, they're on the front lines of some of the most devastating crisis for people in the world. So, I think about their lives and I'm just so grateful that people have the bravery and the commitment to do that. And I also remind myself that I have this, when I think about things like that, usually the idea I come back to is that feeling like I can't do a lot is a bad reason not to do a little, because sometimes I think about what's there to be done and I just get so overwhelmed that I end up doing nothing. I end up doing F all. So I remind myself, feeling like I can't do a lot is a bad reason not to do a little. And I was talking about this with Julie, actually, and we were seeing a few bigger artists cover If the World Was Ending because it was sort of in the zeitgeist at the time. And we were like, well, maybe we could like put some of them together and, use it as a way to raise some money. And that snowballed into texting all of our friends. And all of a sudden we had like 20 plus massive artists all singing this song together. And then first and foremost, the idea was like, people are going to want to listen to them. And then if we put Crystal at the end talking about Doctors Without Borders, then they'll listen to that too. And then they'll be moved. And then, maybe we can raise some awareness and money. And the video ended up raising, I think, over $50,000 and got a few million views. I haven't checked in a while, but it was an exciting thing for all of us and really felt like it wasn't some corporation telling us to put this whole thing together. It really was like a group of artists who were just thinking, all right, like we don't really know what we can do, but a little is more than nothing, so let's try.
The man with the golden heart, J.P. Sachs, is our guest, and of course the golden tongue and the golden pencil, who creates some great music. Dangerous Levels of Introspection is the name of the newest album. Would you do another song for us?
Let's do it. Okay, I'm going to try and play this new single. I can make no promises for what 10 a.m. voice is going to do with this chorus, but we're going to find out together. Because sometimes when you prioritize vulnerability in your music, it can mean a well-crafted, exposed lyric, or it can mean just screaming and sounding like crap. So it could be both, okay?
For a second, the dysfunction felt romantic. Freezing and I can't stand it. Felt for your mystery, your reckless abandon. Now I prefer you just be candid. I'm trying not to listen to the part of me that knows. No matter what I wanted, now it's out of my control. Brakes cut and everything is coming undone. Full speed, I'm just a blur to everyone. Eyes shut and everything is coming undone. 100,000 miles past when it was fun. Only you get in the way. Only you get in the way. eyes shut, and even though I know how it's ending, I'm still praying for a soft landing. Praying for a soft landing. I'm not looking for any particular new beginnings. I can't keep the space for something else if I keep you in it. It's a bit uncomfortable learning how to. I'm not used to wanting anything that's not you. Brakes cutting, everything is coming undone. Full speed, I'm just a blur to everyone. Eyes shut, everything is coming undone. 100,000 miles past when it was fun. Only you get in the way. Only you get in the way. Eyes shut, even though I know how it's ending, I'm still praying for a soft landing.
I like it. I like it. That's the brand new single.
That's the brand.
I mean, I appreciate you doing this. That's a, you know, I know you artists get up at the crack of noon, but to have you singing, you know, in the morning time, thank you for doing this for us. It's not easy. You normally have the whole band and you're doing this in your living room. You just got out of bed. Thank you very much for doing it. And had a big show last night, you know, and flew in an airplane and all that, you know, now you do this for us. Thank you very much for doing that.
Hey, thanks for having me, Larry. You're facilitating me getting to do what I love for a living. So it's certainly no thing. I'm happy to.
No. Soft Landing is the name of the new single. Those that would like to, you know, to buy the single, you can, of course, get it. You know, iTunes and Spotify and everywhere that you can get singles. And hopefully we can get that, you know, number up to the billion mark as well.
That's what we're going for. It's gotten played on the radio a couple times. And like that's sooner than my songs usually get played on the radio. So it's all very exciting.
Well, that's outstanding. And the tour, when does the tour, I mean, of course, you're already doing the international stuff, but when does the tour officially kick off? I think February in the U.S. or when do you have the...
We just finished the first run of the tour. We just did about 18 or 19 dates. I missed a few because I got COVID in the middle, so I had to quarantine for 10
days. You got COVID? Oh, are you okay?
I'm totally fine. But we had to reschedule 6 shows. In the middle of the tour, it was not ideal. We were being so careful. We're taking every imaginable precaution. And then we're in Utah and I'm feeling sniffly. I test positive. And then the bus kept going and they left me in Salt Lake City. And I stayed there for 10 days. And then we got to pick up the dates after that. But we are doing the 6 rescheduled dates and then a bunch more of Canada that I haven't played in yet. In February, I think we have 13 or 14 dates in North America in February. And then in March, we go to Europe. And then probably next fall, we'll do another big North American run.
All right. Well, it's exciting stuff. I mean, this is a great time to be JP Sachs. And so when did you go from being Jonathan to JP? At what point in your life do you remember when that started?
Moment of birth.
Oh, really? Immediately? That's what you were called?
Yeah, it was JP to my parents from the jump. There's no one really calls me Jonathan. The doctors call me Jonathan. But yeah, I think my parents knew I was going to be JP and they didn't know what it was going to stand for yet. So they were trying to figure out what the J and the P were going to stand for. my maternal grandfather is Janos, which is Jonathan in Hungarian. And then my paternal grandfather is Percy. But they weren't sure they wanted me to be like Jonathan Percy. They wanted to like take the letters from my grandfather's, but that was it. But then they couldn't come up with anything that they liked better than Jonathan Percy. So I ended up Jonathan Percy, but my parents called me JP from the beginning.
So why did you want to call the album, speaking of names, Dangerous Levels of Introspection? That is a deep title for an album.
Yeah. So it's a song on the album. And I wrote it with Greg Kirsten and Amy Allen. And this was maybe like 10 months ago now, like last fall. And I was just having a nostalgic day. I had breakfast with a couple friends earlier and we were telling stories about, you know, being 20 in Los Angeles. And, you know, when I was 20 in Los Angeles, you know, sleeping out of my car, or I was going to open mics, every open mic I could possibly find and trying to make friends so I could sleep on their couches. And everything was an adventure and we had no money. But it was like you woke up every morning not knowing how the day was going to go. And as much as that was terrifying, it was also like really exciting. So we were telling these stories. We were showing pictures and like just laughing. And I show up to the session kind of in that mindset. So we sort of continue these conversations. And I think there's an amount of romanticizing the past that can be really beautiful and actually, you know, keep you more engaged in those memories and make life more beautiful, more colorful. But then there's a line at which if you over romanticize the past, you really risk missing the romance of the present, like missing the all of the beauty of the present moment if you can't live in how poetic it is until it's behind you. So we're having these conversations, and at some point I go and I say to Amy, I'm like, this might be dangerous levels of introspection, but blah, 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 blah. And she laughs and she goes like, you could totally call the song that. And I think I said something like, I don't know. That's a lot of words, Amy. but we're like, whatever, let's just call the song that. And then we write it. And I'm like, should we call the album that? And then at first my thought was like, no, so many words. But then I just couldn't come with anything that felt more right. It seemed to encapsulate the entire body of work, because even though, you know, there's a lot of different emotional spaces on this album, right? You know, we talk about especially learning what it means to, you know, learning what it means to be myself in and out of love. But, you know, there's also songs about grief. There's songs about friendship. There's songs about growth. And the through line when I really thought about it was, there isn't any one particular thought or one particular feeling on this, but every feeling and every thought is certainly overthought and overfelt. So let's call it Dangerous Levels of Introspection.
There's only one title better than Dangerous Levels of Introspection.
Tell me.
The deluxe edition of Dangerous Levels of Introspection.
Larry, I didn't know where you were going with that, and I think you crushed it.
I crushed it. I didn't hit a wall this time. See, I crushed it. I went through the wall. JP Sachs is our guest, and we've got time for one more song. What's it going to be? Where did we go? What path did we take to that one?
We're talking about Dangerous Levels of Introspection.
Oh, look at that.
Look at that. I knew it would happen. I knew we would have the right answer. I don't miss my apartment. Ceiling 6 feet tall. When my neighbor's schizophrenic. And screaming through the paper thin walls. I don't miss my LeBaron. The steering pulling left. Losing nights in Venice to strangers acting like my best friends. I don't want any of it back, but I miss how it felt. Yeah, it happened so fast. I kind of miss myself. Dangerous levels of introspection. Tripping over my own reflection. I don't know where I'm going with it. Really shouldn't matter. Ruining a moment with some reckless nostalgia. Dangerous levels of introspection leading me back to you. Ooh, leading me back. Ooh, I don't miss your attention, needing it so bad. How you never mentioned my existence to your religious dad. I don't miss being so naive, but part of me prefers it to a passive animosity. But if anybody happens to ask, I don't want any of it back, but I miss how it felt. Yeah, it happened so fast, I kinda miss myself. Dangerous levels of introspection. Tripping over my own reflection. I don't know where I'm going with it, really shouldn't matter. Ruining a moment with some reckless nostalgia.
dangerous levels of introspection leading me back to you. Ooh, leading me back.
Nice, nice. J.P. Sachs. And the title track from Dangerous Levels of Introspection, the new album, which, of course, there's a deluxe edition as well. Please pick it up. Where, of course, can people find out about the tour and about your schedule and your life and everything going on in the world of J.P. Sachs?
Wherever people follow others on the internet, I can be one of those people. J.P.S.A.X.E. just on all of the places people are followed.
Well, thank you for giving up your time this morning, waking up so early after being out on tour and joining us. It's a pleasure always to catch up with you and to have you on the show. You're a great person to have on, a great artist, singer, songwriter. We love catching up with you. And when you come to DC, we'd love to have you back in the studio again. And what's your plan for the holidays? You and Julia going somewhere or hanging out at home?
Be with the family. It's been a lot of touring recently. So I think we decorated, as you can see. Being at home, being snuggly, watching Christmas movies, being with our friends, keeping it simple.
Well, happy holidays to you guys, and thank you, JP. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Larry, and all my love to you and your family as well.
Anything you want to say to the troops who are tuned in?
Oh, wow. We almost did one of the USO tours. And I really want to do it. So what I would like to say to the troops is that I'm going to try and come meet you on bases all over the world. And it's one of the things I'm the most excited for. Firstly, I made a lot of this music with veterans. Benjamin Rice, one of my main producers, Josh Goodwin, one of my main mixers, both veterans. And being able to play this music for you where you are, being able to come to you, meet you, share these songs together is going to be a special thing for me and a very, very, very small and significant token of my gratitude for everything you do. That's what I would like to say to them.
Well, well said. Thank you, J.P. Sachs. Thank you so much for being with us. And again, happy holidays to you. The new album is called Dangerous Levels of Introspection. It's available right now. My name is Larry London, and you are watching VOA TV. This is Border Crossings.